depending on your translation, it will say what is in your hand or what is in thine hand. Doesn't matter that it's found there in Exodus chapter 4 and verse 2. It's a good question. And this is something that takes place at a time when Moses had cold feet. He's just a classic case of someone who had cold feet. You know, the Lord had asked him to deliver Israel from Egypt, and Moses just wasn't very anxious to do that. He came up with a number of reasons, excuses actually. And so he really took some convincing. So the Lord asked him this question. And the rod or staff in his hand was used to demonstrate the power behind Moses in the task before him. And you see that in verses 3 through 5. And then down in verse 17 of Exodus chapter 4. Thou shalt take this rod in thy hand wherever thou shalt do signs. That's a sign of the power of God that would be with him. Now we're told in the New Testament that tremendous strength may be ours. That's not necessarily talking about physical strength now. Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I think often we fail to utilize this because we think that the strength there, you know, it must always be huge. And if it's not huge, you know, and just greater than, I don't know, whatever we choose to compare it to, then we just don't have very much. And I just don't think that's the case. And I don't think that the scriptures always bear that out. Mostly it's just simple trusting faith, determination, commitment, things like that. That's what the strength is all made up of. But when we ask the question, what is in your hand, I got some examples here I'd like for us to consider. Now, the first place that I'd like for you to go is to the book of Judges. And in Judges chapter 3, and we're going to take a look at one of the judges. And this is about all that's said of him in Judges chapter 3. And verse 1, you know, what's in your hand, Shamgar? That's his name. He was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad. And he also delivered Israel. A lot of the judges of Israel spent their time delivering Israel from an enemy. And Shamgar is one of them. It's enough to be said about him. But look what he had in his hand. He had an ox goad. Now, an ox goad's a stick that could be sharpened on the end. Just be wood, or it could have a piece of sharp stone or a piece of metal on the end of it. And it was something that was used to prod a bulky animal. I think today anymore they have, they used to have, I don't know if you can still use them or not, but they used to have electronic devices, give an animal a little shock. Some of them don't like to go up in the loading chute, and so they need a little prompting, an ox goad, you know, poke them along a little bit. To get them up in there, but that's what it was used for. So it was just something that was common. It's almost like it was something just be laying around, practically. But it became a formidable weapon here. And I think to myself, there is just no way that anyone, I don't care who it would be, could come over here and be able to slay 600 men with an ox goad unless God was with that person and behind the actions that are taken. Then we can move ahead in the Bible a little bit. We'll not read it, but you know the story. Well-known story. It's David. Well, what's in your hand, David? And you remember what David had in his hand? Well, he had a sling. Saul tried to put his armor on him. Well, that wouldn't work. And David didn't want to use it. He said, I haven't proven it. In other words, I haven't worn it. I haven't tried it out. Works for you, Saul. I don't know if it worked for me. So he just go with what he had, which was a sling. And in chapter 17, we find out that this sling, using that sling and the stones, that this killed this terrifying Goliath of Gath. Now, he was terrifying because when he would come out in the morning to curse the people of Israel. Well, they would all just, the fighting men just run off. They were scared of him. But David wasn't. You read that real carefully. You find out while all of these brave and older fighting men ran away from Goliath, when David went out to meet him and Goliath made his appearance, David ran toward him to confront him. And what he had in his hand brought down the giant. But we would understand that he had God on his side and God was behind all of this. We might ask a question, moving a little bit forward, kind of keeping in mind something that took place in the Old Testament, but it's mentioned in the New Testament, John chapter 4. John chapter 4. When you ask yourself about another Old Testament character of Jacob, well, what did you have in your hand, Jacob? Well, he had tools to dig a well, Jacob's well. And that's mentioned in John chapter 4, because Jesus ends up at Jacob's well in chapter 4, verse 6. He was wearied with his journey. He sat thus on the well. It's about the sixth hour. And look how it all ended up. It all ends up with this woman of Samaria coming. He has a conversation with her. And look what this developed to. It developed to a number of people believing in Jesus. It just accomplished a lot. But now without the well, that wouldn't have happened. Jesus wouldn't have stopped there, and on it goes. And I doubt that Jacob had an inkling that so many hundreds of years before, well, I'm going to dig this well, and one of these days, Jesus will be sitting there, and this Samaritan woman, no, he didn't. That's not how that worked. We understand that. But look what did happen, and how it started off with something so simple. They needed a well for their livestock and for themselves. And so he dug a well. What else do we have? Well, what's in your hand, young man? Don't know his name. Not at all. You go forward in John to chapter 6. We don't know what he had. But what he had was some food. And it wasn't much, you might say, by a lot of standards. It was kind of meager. I'm sure it was enough for him. But in John chapter 6, and we want to look at verses 9 through 13. They wondered how they were going to feed all these people. There's a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish. But what are they among so many? Now, please get the idea out of your head that this barley loaf would be something like a loaf of bread, you know. It wouldn't be anything like that. It could be any size. And chances are, this was kind of small size. And he had 5 of these, and these 2 fish, and that would be enough now for, a day's worth of food. He stretched out far enough. And even then, when they broke down into the bread, they didn't get to eat the whole thing. They had to break through that hard outer crust. There'd only be maybe just a handful inside. But he had 5 of them and 2 fish. And what are they among so many? Good point. Jesus said, make the men sit down. And there was much grass in the place. So the men sat down in number, about 5,000. 5,000 men. How many women were there? How many children were there? Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes, as many as they would. And when they were filled, all of them, he said unto his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Well, look what was accomplished with just something small in this young man's possession in his hand. And then if we go to the book of Mark, chapter 12, we'll find something there. And that's this, again, someone who's unnamed, no name, does describe her though. in Mark chapter 12, verse 42, as a poor widow. But if we take up the reading here and look at verses 41 through 44. Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. Now let me just pause there. It's generally reported that when people gave in the treasury, if they gave a lot, they wanted notoriety with this. You know where Jesus one time says, you know, don't go sounding a trumpet like, you know, people. Well, what's he talking about, sounding a trumpet? Well, it's sounding the trumpet to draw attention. And one of the things that they wanted to draw attention to was something like this, where, you know, somebody would be throwing in a large amount. I want everybody to see this now. You got to admit, you know, well, why are you doing that? Are you doing that because it's for the Lord and for His work and everything? Or are you doing it just because it makes you look, you know, important, magnanimous, generous and all? Well, I think we can understand that. But there was this certain poor widow. She threw in two mites, which make a farthing. I know what a farthing is. Yeah, my mother's from England. And a farthing was a very small coin, less than a penny. As a matter of fact, it was a quarter of a penny. Last time I was there, they didn't have those anymore. They were phasing out half pennies. So you can imagine, you know, this just wasn't a huge amount at all. He called unto him his disciples and saith unto them, verily I say unto you that this poor widow hath cast in more than all they which have cast into the treasury. It wasn't the amount. For all they did cast in of their abundance. And she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. So what she had done here, it was a real sacrifice, even though it was two small coins. Is that all it is? Yeah, but if it's everything you got. You know, 100% is a whole lot more than 5%. Think of manageable numbers, if you will. So we can understand that. And I got this thing, I don't remember where I got this at, but it's a little bit of a verse here. It says, it's not what you do with a million if riches should e'er be your lot, but what are you doing at present with the dollar and a quarter you've got? I think that fits there, doesn't it? So what we end up with is that greatness in God's sight does not depend on the value or the enormity of the thing in our hand. The greatness is in the power that was behind the ox goad, the sling, the digging tools, the food. It was in the consecrated heart, like that of the widow. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 10, it says, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. I understand that there might be exceptions to that, but I think the exceptions to that would be rare. Very likely and overwhelmingly in a general way, what Jesus had said there was true at the time and is still true today. Now there's a second question I'd like for us to consider. And that is, what is in your hand? Speaking as friends, what's in your hand, friend? Think about that. What's in your hand? Now let's not be worrying about everybody else's hand. What's in your hand? What are you going to do with what you've got or what's available to you? Think about that for just a moment. What's in your hand? What do each and every one of us, myself included, have in our hand, have in our power, so to speak? Well, we've got our life. That's right. And you are the only one that can live it. And you are the one who will give an account for it. Now, a number of times in the Scriptures, we're told that very thing, that we will give an account of our life. What we do matters. I think we get ourselves deceived in this idea. Well, it doesn't matter to me, so it doesn't matter to anybody, and most importantly, it doesn't matter to God. That somehow or another, we put blinders on God or something. Really? Really? You think that? My, my. Aren't you the powerful one that you're able to put blinders on God? No, it does matter what we do. And we will one day have to give an account for it. In Romans chapter 14 and in verse 12, every one of us shall give account of himself to God. Every one of us. That's even those folks who say, well, it doesn't matter to me one way or the other. That's even those folks, you see. Not everybody's going to get away with this. And both our present and future are what we make of them. Over in Galatians chapter 6, it's a passage that's quoted a lot, and not necessarily from, you know, religious-minded people. But, it, you know, do not be deceived, God is not mocked. Now, that might not be quoted all the time, but the next part a lot of times is, whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. No matter how much people try to come up with it, that somehow or another, there's an act, an action, a relationship, whatever it is, and it's like there's just no consequence, there's nothing that's going to happen, and so on, and it's all just free and clear. Is that right? Is that right? And even then, whatever the consequence might be, or the result, whatever that might be, whether it would be good or bad now, that might not be seen right away. You might not see it in 5 minutes. But what the Scriptures have to say here, and what we all understand, is that what we sow, we will reap. Of course, this is taking something from farming, an agrarian society. They knew all about this. I think they pretty well knew that they went out here and planted a seed in the ground. Now, largely what a lot of them all planted was barley. That was the big thing. Easy to grow, hardy, and they used that. But that's the bread and the wheat of the Scriptures. It's actually barley. They knew if they went out there and planted that today, that they wouldn't be out there tomorrow getting the heads off of the barley, and there we got it, you know. They knew that. They knew they planted it in the ground, and they had to wait a while, and then they'll reap. Don't we understand that that's how it works with our actions? Not immediate sometimes. Sometimes it might be. Sometimes it might be long range, but whatever it is, what we sow, we will reap. How does that relate to our life? Same way. What we do, one day, the consequences, the results, good or bad, we answer for it. So what's in your hand? What's under your control? Your life. And think about this as it relates to things like, you know, being approved of God at the time of judgment. Well, what you do now will matter then. And there's just too many people that think, well, I can get by with it now, you know. My closest friends don't know. Maybe my spouse doesn't know. The people I work with, they don't know. Nobody knows this. And we think, well, we've got away with it then. Well, I guess you have now. But what about later? And it says in 2 Timothy that some men's sins follow after them to the judgment. What then? It's in my control, in your control. What are we going to do with it? What's in your hand? Your life. Your life. Your life now. An eternal life. Yeah. It's there in our hands. What about the time that we have? You know, time is either friend or foe. I'm just sore all over today. My son-in-law and daughter-in-law talked me into playing in this golf tournament yesterday. Boy, what an embarrassment. I was the embarrassment. I played one time in 3 years. And I'm 3 years older than the last time I played. And I'm telling you, when I got up this morning, I was really feeling that. And I'm still feeling it, you know. Time was not my friend yesterday, nor is it today. But that's the way it is. Time is friend or foe. However that works out. We're supposed to use it wisely. It tells us in Psalms chapter 90 and verse 12 that we should number our days, use them appropriately. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 16, I like what the English Standard Version has here. It's been translated a lot of different ways. Use your time wisely, circumspectly, and so on like that. But the English Standard Version has making the best use of your time. You mean that's something that's important? That's something that matters? Of course it is. And the reason it matters is because we find it here in the Scriptures. Make the best use of the time that you have allotted to you. And we all have control over that kind of a thing. And then, now we talked about this somewhat last week on Sunday night, but it bears mentioning here as well. Just think about your influence. Who has control of your influence? Your influence is in the hands of whom? Well, you. Well, other people don't pay attention to me. Yeah, but you still should be trying to exhibit and show some influence. Everyone has some influence. We talked about that at length last week. Not going to go over it again, but our influence ought to be for good. And the passages we used last week, we use again. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, that we're supposed to be salt and light. You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden underfoot of men. Salt influences food. That's what they're talking about there. And it can, for good. And then what else? You're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, under a basket, but on a candlestick. They get it up there high where it can give out light. They don't try to prevent it from giving light. And it'll give light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So our influence is right there. It's in our good works, and there are others that will see our good works and be influenced by that. And then glory will go to God in heaven over this. Well, that's right. So we have in our hand our influence. We have in our hand our abilities, whatever they might be, whatever that is. And whether great or not, you know, people have got abilities. Sometimes those abilities are turned into what we sometimes refer to as skills. They're being able to be used in different ways and so on. Our son-in-law comes from a family that are just talented artists. I don't know if there's anybody in that family incapable of drawing or painting or making things. I mean, it's just amazing. And that's carried over into other things. They're all just excellent cooks. And what they make, you know, tastes good, looks good, all of them. You know, all of them. But all to different degrees and so on. Now, you folks have seen some of Sean's work, and it's really good. But he has a sister that's, got him beat two or three times over. At one time, all of the Kmart stores in the Ontario side of where New York's at, she was over all of that when it came down to decorations and setting things up for advertisements and arrangements for when they had seasonal changes and things like that. Catherine was in charge of all those things. They came out of her, and I marvel at something like that. you know. I can remember when I was in high school, I tried to make a birdhouse. The birds wouldn't even get near it, you know. And she's able to make these things. They're really good. She's the best of all of them. But, you know, you think about that and how here's somebody that has this ability. And they're able to hone that into a skill and to use that. She made lots of different illustrations and cartoons and one thing and another that could be used in Bible classes at the church where she was at. Made a lot of them for Sean. And Sean himself got involved in some Bible study materials that were made here in the United States. Drew a lot of the illustrations for those. You know, it's just having these abilities, and they all differ. You know, people have this ability, that, but we've got some abilities. Everyone can do something. Don't pass this off. Well, I can't do this, you know, and so I'll just, and then think to yourself, well, this is why, if I can't do that, I'll just do nothing. I can't be president of the United States. I don't know who would be, want that, but I can't be president of the United States, so I'll just quit. I think I'll get a job at General Motors. Well, I can't be CEO, so it's just out for me. Really? I don't think that's how it works in life. Everybody can do something. And finding what we can do. You know, I remember the man in West Virginia. Never taught a class, never led a prayer, never helped at the table, anything like this and so on. But when he got to work and there was a gospel meeting, he invited everybody that he met in the break room. Lunchroom. It's something he could do. So I said, that's not much of an ability. Really? So everybody's doing that, right? I'm just saying. Luke chapter 12 and verse 48. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required. That should be B and yeah, B. Required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. Yeah. So, and I think when we have this tendency, a lot of people do, to sell themselves short is what I always call it. Somebody has an opportunity. Whatever that is. You've got an opportunity. I've got an opportunity. And this has been presented to us. Providentially, you say, okay, fine. But someone has presented this opportunity because they think that you can do it. They wouldn't do that otherwise. They're not going to come along here and say, hey, we need somebody to fill this position, and I think you'd just be awful at it. And they give you the job. It doesn't happen like that. They come along and make the offer because they think you can do it. They have confidence in you. But what happens on the other end? Do people have confidence? Sometimes people have overconfidence and they end up a failure. But a lot of times what happens is, oh, that's been offered to me. And then immediately, everybody just kind of, you know, puts the parking brake on. Oh, I just don't think so. I don't think this. And who is it that's stopping you? Who is it now that put the brake on? Well, you did. I did. We sell ourselves short. We convince ourselves. And so it just doesn't happen. Doesn't develop. And, you know, it's sad. And so what a lot of times holds us back? Well, we hold ourselves back. And I think too, you know, on times like this, that we need to realize that everybody can do something. We ought to do what we can do, and who knows what'll happen after that. Now another thing that you have in your hand, friend, is your soul. You know, Peter's admonition in Acts chapter 2 and verse 40. You know what that is. He said that, save yourselves. Save yourselves from this untoward, this wicked generation, this wicked age. Save yourself. You've got a hand in it. Too many times in modern religion, it's we don't have anything to do with this. Man doesn't have anything to do with it. You can't do a thing. God does it all. You just turn it all over to Jesus and you just sit back and do nothing. Well, that's not what he told them on the day of Pentecost. You repent and be baptized, every one of you. That's what you need to do. And then he backs that up by saying, in his exhortation, save yourselves. You've got a hand in this. We do. I think we need to realize that. That's something that's in our hand as well. In Acts chapter 8, verses 36-37. Acts chapter 8, verse 36-37. What shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Well, it's just something that's just too precious to lose. But who's giving the exchange here and so on? Oh, well, the devil puts things in front of us and this, that, and the other and so on. Well, acknowledge all that. No problem there. But when it comes right down to it, someone makes a decision. And they'll make a wrong decision and they'll decide, well, I'll take that in exchange for my soul. You know, the devil put the temptations out in front of Eve. And she dove right in, didn't she? That's right. He didn't force her. He wasn't over there, dragged her over there to it, took the fruit, whatever it was, and stuffed it into her mouth. No, she just decided to do it in exchange for what they had there in the garden. Adam went right along with it. How many times do you see that played out over and over in the Scriptures? Where somebody does something, takes something, whatever it is, in exchange for their soul. Don't let that happen. Understand that you do have some control over what you do. And then, correspondingly, with what your destiny will be. And then, you know, our decisions are important. Now, one more thing. Find your songbook and put the songbook in your hand. What have you got in your hand? Well, you've got the songbook. Have we got a song that's been selected to sing? Yes. Do you have that song open right there in your hand right now? Well, what you've got there, so to speak, is a doorway or an opening or an invitation for eternity. What will you do with it? Why not obey the gospel today? Why not believe in Jesus Christ, repent of your sins, be baptized today? The opportunity is yours. And the songbook's in your hand. So while we're singing this song, you can make a decision. And we hope and pray that you make the right decision. And you would obey God today. If you're subject, why don't you come while together we stand and sing.